You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
How are you?
And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering anime that aired the week of the 5th of October 2020 to the 11th of October 2020. With, I believe, no exceptions. Well, one's a sort of exception, but it did actually air this week as well.
Okay.
And we'll open with Returning Champion. It's episode 25 of Golden Kamuy to Karafuto, which I swear had a different title when I first wrote it in, and then when we rewatched the episode, the title had changed.
It was a different part of Russia you had down there.
Yeah. So, we're back, going even further north than ever, as we have to try and remember who's allied with who at this point in this story.
Yeah, I was going to ask you guys. I was like, wait, okay, these guys are with them, but why are these guys separate? Did they betray whom? What's happening?
Yeah, I sort of went straight into this one, thinking, maybe I should have watched the episode with part of the Skippy Call Up again, but I sort of puzzled it back out again, so I was like, that's fine.
I'd forgotten some of the specifics, I think, was the problem, yeah.
Yeah, the only little tricky bit is remembering who's in Kira Ranki's group, because they don't actually appear in this episode.
Himself, really.
It's Kira Ranki, you got Ogata, of course, because he's a bastard, and Shiraishi is there as well, because he's in it for the money, and probably for his own safety.
Mm.
Yeah. And, of course, Usurpa, who is the person they spend the episode looking for.
Mm.
And who is it who is searching? It is our hero, Sayishi Sugimoto, a.k.a. Sugimoto the Immortal. We've got a guy whose name I can never remember, even though he's one of my favourites.
Yeah, I'm going to have to write down the...
Tanigaki, yeah.
That's it, yes.
Yeah, he's going to be important in talking about this episode.
You got Sergeant Tsukushima, who was the brains of the operation.
Yes.
I like the fact that the different groups have different straight men, and he's going to be the straight man in this one, which is nice, yeah.
Yeah, he's basically taking a Usurpa's place in having to react to all the other idiots around him.
He's got a lot flat reaction, but it's a different comedic reaction. It works pretty well.
You can also speak Russian as you're going to a territory that's split between an island split between Japan and Russia in ownership.
That's both useful for the plot, but also very, very funny when all of them will go like, hey, tell him in Russian that I'm going to fucking cut him from his guts to his garters. And, you know, I'm going to do all this kind of thing. He's like, I'm not translating that. It's a good bit.
That's too complicated a phrase for me to translate.
I know a bit of Russian, lads. Conversational Russian. That's what I got.
And what's the third guy with the eyebrows called? Kirito.
I keep forgetting his name. He's like the descendant of the Satsuma clan. Like, you know, like a really long back lineage. So that's why he's so fucking proud and arrogant and stupid.
Yeah.
The guy who's like... probably definitely one of the gay guys because he fancies I was going to say our villain, but Tsurumi, god damn it, it's hard to keep track of who's the villain.
His dad's like a famous admiral, and he's having to live up to the history of his brother, his dead brother as well. Those are the other elements to know about it. That does not come through in this episode. In this episode, he is the jerk of the four.
Yeah, you got to have a jerk as well. That's important for the comedy stuff. I did like the way it shows us, like, hey, remember they found the guy? He was about to tell him where the gold was. He gets shot. Sugimoto gets shot. A serpent's been taken away. Are we going to show how Sugimoto survived a bullet to the head? No, we just see him pull a hat over a bandage. And it's like, oh, yeah, of course.
I think it's fine. But they went over that at the end.
Yes.
I know, but they didn't cover it in this. You know what I mean?
Because
I think some really, really kind of rough and ready battlefield surgery to, like, I think replace, take out like a part of his skull. I think he could be missing like a little bit of his brain, I think.
Because Tsurumi's like, oh, you're now in the missing parts of the brain damage club. Friends. Yes. Because they've now got the mad scientist on their side as well, necessity more than anything. Yes, your other fella who's got the scars on his face and is continually being disfigured as the story goes on makes an appearance. We do get a glimpse of the what's his name? Hijikata's group, yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, Hijikata, the other old man, the
Ushiyama.
Yeah, and the chief from the head guard from the prison, which they all just destroyed.
Yeah.
I guess he's on the team now? I'm not entirely sure.
He always was, wasn't he? That was
I guess that's true, yeah. But
and they still had the blind man who wears the little amplifiers over his ears if you can hear you real good and shoot you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He doesn't look very well, though. He also has a bullet to the head.
Yeah.
And they don't have a mad scientist to save him.
And he's not known for being immortal, so, yeah.
Yeah. But we don't get much of them, we just get them regrouping.
You just get a shot of them basically looking at the prison. Jeez, that shit got fucked. And I was like, oh, yeah, it did.
It burned to the ground, everybody inside is dead. all these dudes, no, they were hardened criminals, but they had nothing to do with this fucking this scheme that's going on. We didn't need to burn them to death, did we? Ah, how bad. They were going to hell anyway. It's all about what about our dream, though. Well, we're getting this gold. I mean, people think we're going after the gold because we're greedy. No, we've got to just go to finance our grander designs. That's what no one realizes just yet, anyway.
But the bulk of the episode is them questioning various people about, have you seen an Ainu girl pass through here? Have you seen this Ainu girl, which is constantly Sugimoto pulling out the photos that Inkarman took of Tanigaki?
All right, one question. One, why did they take so many different sexy pictures of Tanigaki, besides the obvious reason that he's hot? Two, why does Sugimoto have them very close at hand at all times?
It's a big stack. He keeps rearranging himself in his pocket as he puts on the wrong one. He's got to be dramatically. You know, he doesn't look before he does it. He just kind of whips it out, not realizing yet. I think they booked the session for the afternoon. They already got one of everybody. It's like, well, we should probably use the rest of the film. Yeah, so let's get a few other shots for my personal collection.
The first time that happened with a funny word is, man, oh, that's real cute. Isn't that in there? And Superman's like, what? It's like, oh, wrong.
I like that guy's at the fight at the end as well, looking super excited when Tanigaki's going to take his shirt off.
He's seen the advertising leading up to this fight. So he's just like, oh, I'm fucking down for this. And not only that, but despite the fact that Tanigaki, as everyone points out really, really rudely, you put on a lot of weight, dude. And they're all just wanting to get in top form again. With this sweet fight that they're going to have. Not that they plan any of this fucking shit.
Kawito ends up throwing some drink on Sugimoto. They get into a brawl.
Don't get that on you. It'll stain it. And so he throws it on him. And it's like, give me a fucking glass.
he's being an absolute fun dickhead. And you got to deal with it. But Sugimoto is a bit more tense at the moment. Because he's worried about a surfer, and that's where he's kind of panically putting out the wrong photos. But they're eventually able to kind of track down, we've seen this Ainu girl before, and there's an Ainu village on the island, probably where she's headed to.
I did like the way that old woman didn't react at all to these guys brawling in her wine shop, because it was kind of like, yeah, soldiers, manly dudes, I'm used to this, it's fine.
Yeah, then they run into somebody, and they ask him, the guy says, oh yes, the Ainu girl went into the forest alone, and they're like, oh, we better go after her, but it turns out to be an entirely different girl.
They have brought the kid, Boner.
Boner.
Because they brought Boner and the dog. Ryu have stored away in one of the packages.
Yes. It's very important, because then we get the scene later on where the dog is looking jealously at another dog's
hat. Fucking sweet dog hat! which is a weird thing to convey with a non-talking dog, that it's jealous of another dog's hat. We'll take him because it'll make us look good in front of any Ainu. They'll more likely talk to us if we have an Ainu kid.
Yeah, wish they do run into this girl. The girl is like, oh, it's a bit like a serpent, but it's not her.
So was it a mistake, or was he sending them the wrong way? It was just coincidentally another.
The same to you, do they? Is that the way it is?
That's the way it was suggesting with the thing. It's just like, it's an Ainu kid. They probably don't know the difference between them. But this is a completely separate girl who has fallen off the back of her granddad's sleigh.
Yes, the granddad's death. And so she's waiting for the granddad to realize. And we're told there's things worse than bears in this forest.
Because it's like, bears haven't hibernated yet. We got to worry about bears. But there's worse thing than bears.
Yes. Yeah.
A bear over there right now, though. Oh, my gosh. Oh, what's that on the bear? It seems to be biting into its head. Oh, goodness.
And more importantly, it's not a CG bear.
No. I didn't mind the dog sleds being CG, because it was like, that's a lot of dogs to animate. I get it. That's fine.
It's not so bad. I think they pick and choose when more carefully which shots they can use the kind of CG to rely on over there. And it's off also like other elements, and they're like, you know, the snow getting thrown up by the sled, for instance, that can cover up some of the kind of obvious details of that, too.
And a lot of the stuff with the sleds are like background shots of the sleds coming in. So it's not so bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Also not a CG Wolverine. Which yes. is like, oh, it's so cute. How could this thing take down a bear? And it just
it immediately leaps on him.
It's got such cute little round eyes. It couldn't be a killer. Do you see what it did to that bear? What's it going to do to you?
Mm.
And it starts fucking flying.
They have a lot of trouble with this because they're punting it off things. They're trying to shoot it, but it's very small and quick. And, you know, and it's a smaller target than a bear.
It keeps getting back up again. Just, we got to get the fuck out of here. It's going to get out of the back of this sled.
Yeah, I did and like the grandpa coming in. It's like, go, go, go.
They did get like a shot off of it, you know, and it's thrown up, you know, and a cloud of like the snow was thrown up. And did we get it? Okay, we better get onto the sled. And then just like run onto the sled. It just looms over the hill. Dun, 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 dun. Oh, shit. The Wolverine is still after us.
A bunch of these huge fucking dudes just running away from this tiny thing when you know the fucking scripts they've been into. But yeah, this thing is crazy. So.
And that's where you get Tanigaki. You're gotta lose some weight. And sorry, buddy, it's you. You're slowing us down. No hard feelings, so it seems to be just fine to catch up and regroup later on in the village.
I mean, he probably still is annoyed at these guys, but they've kind of been jerks to him consistently. So yeah, used to it at this stage.
So then we learn a bit more about the villages this far north and how they have like different houses for different parts of the season.
It's like a different tribe of Ainu, but they do recognize the Hokkaido Ainu.
And Koito does a deal with the little girl because he doesn't want to walk to the next town.
And they're all just they don't compliment him at all. They're just like lazy fuck. But they're going like, what a mature young woman.
Yes.
Yeah. People, I bilked them good. I tripled the price for these days. Dogs are worth.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I pay for that lead dog with a sweet hat.
And that takes them to the next town, which has got a bunch of Russians living there. Because they're like former prisoners, aren't they?
Yes, there were prisons on the island, but at the conclusion of the war, there was like no real need for them anymore, so the prisons just closed down and just turned the prisoners loose to live wherever they wanted to, wherever they landed.
Someone else's problem now. Yeah, basically.
And so Sugimoto gets into a fight with a guy in the bar. The bar owner then kidnaps the lead dog, and they do a deal where he needs somebody to replace this guy who they beat up in the Stenka. Is that the name of the fight?
Yeah,
Stenka.
And
also they do have information on the guys they were looking for.
Yeah,
so it's kind of like, well, if we help them out of this situation we put them in, they'll probably be a little more willing to help
and
us.
There's talk of a guy who's introduced betting into the fight who's got a strange tattoo on
a Japanese guy as well. Yeah. Is the other thing. So
yeah, but he only shows
a lot
up.
Of this land is not occupied, but it's been made into Japanese farmland essentially. Yeah. Like they brought a lot of people over to convert it to crops and stuff.
Yeah. This dude only turns up, though, when there's an actual real competition going on. We're like, oh,
only if there's a real fight will he join. And it's like, oh, well, then he'll take his shirt off. Then we'll see his tattoo. Then we know he's one of the guys we need. Yeah.
Anyway, Sugimoto, you get in there. But what? Aren't we all going in? No.
No, you made that guy mad. You started the bar fight. You fucking sorted out. And someone, like, I think the guy who hired him was just like, we just want this guy. So, like, Japanese can't fucking handle it anyway. And then everyone's like, oh, fuck, it's on now. This is a very slight racist insult. Yeah. And they're just like, yeah, we will totally fucking
shirts get this. Off. I do like how everybody has a different chiseled physique. It's not like
a different chiseled physique and a different way of their shirt being slightly off.
Yes.
Attention to detail.
And then
very
the
good.
Amazing bit where it breaks reality and they just start talking to the camera.
Like it's a setup for the fight. They're just sitting down beforehand.
I'm brave friend. I've been training my life for this day. We're going to show him what Japanese fires are all about. He's going to have him quaking in his boots in that ring. He's coming for you. I'm coming for you, Russians.
It's so good.
Yeah. The kick ass dead. That's that wall of beefcake crashing into another wall of beefcake.
Well, that's what it's called, isn't it? It's like the wall of muscle.
Two walls
or something.
Of men, two waves crashing against each other.
Initially I was like, oh, it's obviously like naked, shirtless boxing or wrestling or something like that. And then when it cut into that barn and it was just a bunch of dudes in a small pen just beating the shit out of each other, I was like, okay, I didn't expect that many guys at once.
But they do well for themselves, you know. They kick these dudes' asses, but there's no hard feelings, you know. Like, hey, good fight, or more or less. Don't
underestimate
the Japanese, but I give you a hand up. Yeah, check out these pecs, and it's enough to impress the mysterious stranger who's coming, just watching at the back with his sparkling. Friendly eyes.
The guy.
I do like the way he was framed coming in just with the mustache, because he has the same mustache as your man. You might think, oh, is that him? It's like, no, this is a different guy with an also beautiful mustache.
Yes. It's your fella Charles Bronson, who's clearly based on the British prisoner, not the movie star.
Mm. Mm.
And so I guess we get more of him and more of this bare knuckle boxing next week.
This more fucking Golden Kamuy, like, you know, it's been a while. As I said, trying to just recollect a couple of where the alliances lie now, but it did a fair enough job of reintroducing them. But just to remind you, from this group are operating on the fringes, but we're focusing on this barrel story right now. We're trying to track down Serpa and that lot.
Hmm.
But we're kind of just getting back into it. It was just ridiculously entertaining. That's all the way through. It was just flowed so well. You know, even though it had been so long, you could get drawn straight back into it so easily. That's a strength of the comic. It's adapting, I suppose, as well.
True.
It's a very entertaining adventure yarn, but also for these little cultural details about maybe a part of the world at a certain point in history that you may not. I've heard a ton about, even within the realm of Japanese media that we've been immersed in for a lot of our lives and hobbies. You know? That's, again, tricks you into learning things. I love a lot of our cartoons that we watch seem to do that.
Then we've got, talking of being tricked into learning things, it's Extra Olympia Kyklos, episode 20, Burning Fire. In which the Olympics is underway.
Even fast forward the opening credits, we can get to it sooner.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a little weird because I thought I was going a bit mad, but I thought I'd answer the comments and I was like, okay, it's not just me then.
I thought as you clicked, is there like a double speed option in the player?
Yeah.
Did you actually click on that? But then, no, there's not. What the fuck's happening then?
They have so much to cram in. The mayor has to do his speech in like a little corner box to fit it all in.
Something else did that. I'm probably thinking of Osamatsu when you were getting Dion in the corner reacting to the rest of the episode. I think that's
that's just a variety thing.
The picture-in-picture, the reaction shot kind of thing. Mm.
So we get the opening ceremony. We get like all the events that he's been inventing throughout the series.
I think everyone is just taking it seriously. Like the guy stuffing them olives up their nose, that kind of thing. Yeah.
And then his would-be girlfriend starts making moves on him, and then the Spartans show up. Because
hey, nerd! just messing with you. We're here for the Olympics, Olympics even.
And they came because we heard you really made those Ephesians. Elian, sorry. Look fucking like assholes, and fuck those guys, right? Also, we're going to try that fucking noodle. It looks really good. I mean, it looks terrible.
I bet I
won't enjoy that food at all.
And then they get news from the event that someone has beaten up the mayor. And
we saw it. We see his speech where he's going on and on and on. Every now and again, there's a pause in dialogue and you hear some of his stupid speech and you see him get bonked in the head by a stick.
Yeah.
like maybe his speech went on too long. It's like how they're constantly assuming that's the reason, and then the culprit shows up and they say, yes, I mean it was partly that, but the main reason is the thing we're going to reveal next episode.
Yes,
it's the aliens have done it.
Damn them.
And then we get a song about Prometheus and how we will be back soon and we'll wait for him.
Super speed. It gets into your head.
Yes, I was like, burning fire. I was like, what's that was about? And then I looked it up. I do like how he's wearing sunglasses throughout the bard is.
It's a good look for him.
That's it. We're coming up to the climax. We've got the time travels out the window now.
The event is underway. We can enter it, right?
I see it's back next week because I can see from the preview thumbnail that we got the professor there. Unless the professor's coming back in time to help them. Next episode is called Villager A. Who knows? Yeah, the opening's like a Heath Robinson, Rube Goldberg, and I was like, oh yeah, there's a TV show in Japan which starts with things like that, and yes, it's the Pyagathorian device. And I was like, of course, there we go.
With Time Ball Can 24 for you there.
Yeah. Oh yes, they make this.
Forgot all about that.
That was where I learned this information from, yes. I learned it from another thing we watched for this show.
Again, where it's teaching us while we enjoy ourselves, so that's good. You're never too old to learn, I guess.
Then more new stuff. Akudama Drive, episode 1-7, as in the film 7. Do you remember the 90s?
The V is spelled like a 7.
This show does.
Yeah. Oh wow! It also thank God it seems to have seen other films because, as far as I know, it's only ever seen fucking Blade Runner. And for the love of Christ, will you please see another film besides Blade Runner for your making?
Well, by the end, it's seen Suicide Squad as well.
Yeah.
I did not care for this except for the bits where the separate bits of animation when all the characters are introduced. Those bits were good.
I kind of like the character introduction bits. I'm okay with the premise. I'm like, okay, you just wanted to do your setup. Where are you taking this?
The scene transitions are good as well, with the buildings dropping in and out. But I just could not stand the characters. The designs,
let me like it more was your one who's like, I'm the swindler. I'm not even on the fucking list of guys. I was just like, okay, that's a good thing. Because obviously you've the guy who's like, he was only going to get 3 years in prison in comparison to these guys with their hundreds of years. And I was just like, okay, so really crap criminal and someone who's absolutely not a criminal.
Yeah, I guess those two are the ones you're supposed to sympathize with.
Yeah.
The plot is essentially we're introduced to a bunch of characters who all seem to have names which are basically their character classes in whatever cyberpunk role-playing game this is. And they're all given the challenge.
You got a courier, a brawler, fighter guy, a doctor, a hacker. And you're just like, yeah, that's several classes already.
And they've been asked to rescue Cutthroat from their execution.
I did like the constant advertisements in the background. It's like, Cutthroat execution today! And it's like all of society shuts down so they can watch this very old-fashioned guillotine kill this guy. And I'm just like, yeah, this seems like a dystopia. That's okay.
This one woman, she's leaving work. She rescues a cat from getting run over and then rescues another cat, gets mixed up in it, and then it turns out the cat is like some sort of feline Amanda Waller by the end and has got bombs strapped around their necks.
Yeah, definitely.
Almost makes him more interested a little bit in the second episode. It's like, okay, the cat knows. The cat is behind it all.
Yeah.
I hope this person can remotely control cats or something. It's just something bizarre.
I don't know. I don't really like cyberpunk stuff all that much, I remembered. And I was like, oh yeah, I didn't really like what I saw of Danganronpa. Which
like Danganronpa.
It is the writer of that.
It seems like a premise from one of those games where you have these characters that are boiled down to their most like very basic traits and personalities, and then they're locked into a situation where they gotta work together or else they all die.
Yeah.
Like, I'm fine. Generally, that works better as a game than something you're watching. But, exactly. I'm hoping it can take it somewhere interesting with it. Like, just throwing in the crap criminal and the non-criminal in there. I was just like, yeah. I enjoyed it, but obviously I enjoyed it way more than you guys.
Yeah.
it'd be one thing, if it could be, like adapting a game. But thing is, though, it's not. It's just the people, the folks who were involved in making Danganronpa and similar games. It's just, we're going to make a whole anime series. We've got, come in with our own premise. What's it going to be? Exactly the same as the other stuff we do, but in a different setting slightly.
Okay.
Honestly, spin it out, wildly, really soon. But I can't see it being much more beyond that. Now, those have their own twists and turns as well, and people can kind of get into that, but it's not my kind of mystery. It's a better thing to be discussed, but on this very program that do kind of scratch the itch for us a lot better than this would. This is kind of wild, ostentatious. It's really trying to bring about, what a crazy twist. It's like, these guys are capable of anything. They're more relativists, all of them.
It's one of those things where I felt I was simultaneously too old for it, and yet also exactly the same age as the people making it. In that, this is the sort of dumb thing I might have wanted to make a while ago, sure. Or I would have. But it's just the title. The next episode is called Reservoir Dogs.
It's just kind of lame. It really is really lame. I mean, they're using the same fucking font as Blade Runner when it calls up like Akudama Drive. Just using the fucking Blade Runner font. Again, for the love of Christ, watch another film. Yeah. Read another book, please.
It's still better than the Hypnosis Spike was, though. I got through the entire episode, but I was like, this is so try hard. And it's not for me. And if I'm going to watch six things a week, the sixth thing started on Monday. And even then, that might have to fight off Galandino when that's back.
Galandino is easier. I know it's not as short, but it's easier to get in, though.
Yeah, but I mean, I like to try and keep to six, which I definitely haven't done this week. But that's because I've been off, so it was easier. But that's the plot, yeah. There's just a bunch of guys. So you've got Brawler, who likes beating up robots. Courier, who delivers things to criminals. And then censored heads blow up behind him. Doctor who just appears to be some sort of serial killer.
Sexy.
She did save that guy from having a heart attack by doing open heart surgery in the thing, but she did murder everyone else in
She saved that dude though. He's just I'm gonna cut you up and fix your heart, but he seems to be just lying there.
Hacker who has plasma beams. That was the one thing I did like. Him constantly telling you that these plasma beams could vaporize somebody and nobody see it to take him seriously.
If they play it up, it could be fun that they're really playing into their freaking character classes, where it's just like, come on, hacking's really cool, you guys. It's the most fun part of the game. It could be fun, but I'm not.
Feel free to have fun with it. I'm sure people will. I was just like, I should have not
for you, dude.
I should just not be. I was more annoyed at myself than thinking it would be for me, even though there was all these things which would probably tell me it wouldn't be for me. And a talking cat is not enough to see me through to the next episode.
We've already got some talking cats in this already.
Jujutsu Kaisen episode 2 for myself. Oh man, this is good. This is such a good show.
It's gotta drop the pace and the look at some fucking stage, right? I don't mean that as an insult, I just mean it's very good.
even when it slows down a bit, it still has the style, man. It's not that fucking all over us But at least it seems anyway right now. You can't take that out of it.
And
it's only going to ramp up from here.
The main purpose of this episode is to establish a premise, which I will say is kind of pushed right into the background really quickly. And mainly to introduce Satoru Gojo, our teacher from our jujutsu school that Itadori is going to go to.
It's more so like he's like, okay, we're gonna execute you, but I tell you what, got you a suspended sentence, so either you can keep fighting with us to get these fingers and eat them, because it's rare you find someone who can eat these fucking things, and then when you die those fingers will die, or we can kill you right now. Which would you like, basically?
Yes. And so he agrees to that, and then we get the sequence at the end with the principal of the school basically trying to make Itadori realize what he's actually why he's agreed to come to this school, because his initial thing is to say, oh, it's because my grandfather asked me to.
It was his dying wish and shit. Yes. And he's like, that's not good enough.
That's not good enough. You want to be dying, being killed by a curse, and you'll be cursed.
You're
going to
see some fucked up shit, my friend.
And I was
you will see people die around you.
And I was like, oh my god, that's like this early in the story, and those words are coming back to haunt other characters in the comic right now. They've clearly had the same speech given to them. And so we get this great fight with the principal's puppet of a kappa.
Why are his legs so lean and muscular?
So I can beat the shit out of you better, obviously.
Like a big arm, yeah, and a stupid face, but it's just the legs are just sort of like slender and toned. It is really unsettling.
I like the variants of stuff he's doing, because initially he's doing that thing where you stab the wool. I've forgotten the name of that kind of art. I was just like, oh, fuck, I imagine that thing is also quite deadly when it'll be finished.
And I like the way the principal's played. I like the principal, and I really like how Gojo's been played in the show.
Oh, he's really good. It's like Yuichi Nakamura, who we have heard recently being Shigure Soma on Fruits Basket. So if you need a smarmy fecker to play him, he's the perfect cast. Like that's what Gojo Vaughan is. He's just like, I'm great.
But he is kind of very excited about this whole thing as well. He's got like an excitable energy. I'm just interested to see what'll happen, kind of thing as he goes through the plot.
Well, I was just passing through town. I was getting a few, I was passing by the sweet shop, and I thought I might check in and see what this curse business I've been sensing on the ice cream. It's like, motherfucker, I'm fighting for my life here. You're buying sweets.
No, they're really good sweets. He's explaining as he goes like, hey, give me 10 seconds with that fucking monster so I can fight it. And he's like, yeah, okay, 10 seconds. Cool. And he's like, no, they're really nice. The magic goes right in as he's being very quick and dodging and beating the crap out of the guy in his demonic form. And the demonic form is like, wait, is he just super fast? It's like, nah, he's got something else going on there.
Yeah, and then the 10 seconds are over, and so he doesn't get to voice what it was that he thought Gojo's doing to him.
And again, like, he's really happy with the whole situation, because he's like, holy shit, he has perfect fucking control over this. This is good. And it's like, I can make this work for me.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it does that sweeping around thing. I mean, it doesn't have the thing the Dragon Quest had, where this is like CG kind of sweeping around that walkway in the school, but it still looked pretty nice.
Oh, yeah, it was class. And that's, again, it's just stretched out a small bit from that same scene in the comic. So you can, it's just like an oil space to put in some cool moves.
Yeah,
the animators wanted to like just sort of put some like nice choreography there. Go right ahead if you got space for it right here. It's even this nice as well as like this the establishing that's like, yeah, let's see, we really getting Itadori's his motivation is off really nailed down clearly from the off, you know. It's not good enough to say like, I'm gonna do this for your granddad. Yeah, why would you do it for your granddad if you don't live up to like what you think he expects of you? People die, you could fail them, you're gonna wind up like cursing your granddad then for putting this on you. Yeah, you could come back as a curse. Are you sure you wanna do that then? It's like, no.
It kind of boils down to, it's like, listen, I could run away from this and like live life, and I'd be there sitting reading manga, and then I'd be reminded, oh, there's this monster that I could stop, but it's not my fault. I didn't start it. But it's something that he can change, and it's something he could make the world slightly better, and slightly less fucking people die if he can take care of this. Yeah. So
the more important is he's the only one who can. That's the issue.
Yeah, that specifically it's only him, because it's like it's one in a thousand or one in a million fucking people can not fucking die after eating one of those fingers.
It's more like it's once every 1,000 years. Someone
it's like this very low odds of it happening. So and he's kind of like, if I can make a difference like that, then I don't want to regret living by not doing what I could do. And the principal's just like, all right, you're in. Show him to his fucking dormitory.
Yes.
Put him next to Fushiguro, because you got to have someone to annoy him.
He's so annoyed, because it's like, what the fuck, dude? It's a huge place. There's only 3 first years. It's like, yeah, but it's cool when they're all together.
Yeah. Well, we got to get our third first year now. She's coming into Tokyo on the train right now. She's leaving a small town life behind her. She's going to be a big city girl. Nobara Kugisaki, or her Jujutsu high debut begins.
Then, next on the list is With a Dog and a Cat, Every Day is Fun. So, the owner's had a hard day at work, and she's lying face down on the floor. And the dog's like, come on, play ball with me. I brought this ball, come and play with me. Come on, get on your feet, let's have a play. And then she's thinking, people say that the reason dogs bring you a ball when you're feeling down is because they remember how happy you looked when you were playing with a ball. And so they think having a play with a ball again will bring them joy. Yes. And so she gets up and plays with a dog. And then the cat arrives and is like, oh, I see you're all better now. Guess you won't be needing me.
Was he watching the whole time? And I was like, oh, the cat cares too. That's nice.
Well, it's in its own way. It's in his best interest to you survive.
And in the second half, the dog is, they go to bed. The dog's making itself very comfortable on the bed. And then.
So you can sleep soundly because the dog is taking its time to find the right spot and pad around, you know. Yes.
The dog's fast asleep, happily, but the owner is not because she can hear downstairs the cat going berserk.
This is my time.
I rule the darkness. And keeping in just those cutting shots of the live action cat.
I think that might be straight out of the comic from what I was reading of the reviews today.
Does the comic actually use the same photo?
I'd use this photo. I think they're different photos. I think it's different photos.
They're different photos, yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess if you're the owner and you make the comic, you probably have multiple photos of your cat. Yeah, that's fair.
This is as sinister as possible. So something like a malevolent aura. That's one for that Twitter account, Cat's Malevolent Auras.
My brother's cat, his old cat, used to do that when you'd go round. I'd be sleeping downstairs and then be woken at like 3:30 in the morning, or no, 5:30 in the morning, with the cat just bombing from one end of the lounge to the other.
I found that whenever I was like at someone's house, I'd stay in over and they had a cat. I'd be walking up with that cat, it was shoving its ass in my face.
Oh yeah, that's a sign of affection.
Thanks.
No, that does mean that they like you. Yeah. Also, that they like the heat off you, because that's why they're sitting on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then, we've got Detective Conan, episode 984, Kid versus Komei, The Targeted Lips, Part 2, in which we discover that the other pearls were created using floral ice performance technique. A thing I had not heard of until this episode, so I had to look it up to figure out what it was.
It's quite nice.
Yeah, it's where you drill holes in ice and then pour in food colouring to create flowers, but in this case, Kid has created replicas of these pearls.
Like, it's a nice idea, because obviously you can't really make out the shape of the flower when it's just ice, but then you put the food colouring in and it suddenly appears, and it's nice. But the fact that he's like a magician and an expert at this as well, we can make all these fake rings, I'm just like, that's a bit. I mean, like, it's all a bit much like a giant ice block in a museum kind of thing. But he does appear to have drilled in and taken the pearls. So the dealer is going like, oh, I guess I get fucking paid then because you lost my pearl.
The cop's like, yeah, enough of all this. This is the cop who's always chasing Kaito Kid. Enough of all this. What of you two's Kaito Kid?
Because you were the only two people who walked in.
Take your clothes off.
We're going to strip search you. And obviously, she is very, like, it's like, oh, don't let him strip me naked. And he's like, wait, we could just walk through the door and then the buzzer will go off if we have the ring on us, right? And it's like, that would be an acceptable compromise to finding out which one of you is a guy pretending to be this guy's girlfriend.
But if the buzzer goes off, you're both under arrest. But they go through and the buzzer does not go off. And Kid's got a terrible poker face throughout this. constantly.
He's awful.
Shady looking face or a big old grin on his face. But he keeps on pressing his breasts into Heiji's arm, which is why Heiji is not as good a crap detective as Conan describes it later, because he was like, ha, oh, Heiji's surely figured out that that's kid. No, he had not.
Like, I, for a little bit, I thought he was doing the whole, what's the thing where you slam your hand into the wall?
Cabadon.
And lean him. Yeah. I thought he was doing that to go like, okay, I'm going to play fucking chicken with you right now, kind of thing. But then he was embarrassed when they came in. And I was like, wait, was he just testing this to the girl? Oh, no, he's just an idiot.
He's just an idiot, yes. Because as they went through, I was like, oh, surely kids should be taller than Heiji. And then they addressed that immediately as I had that thought. Conan walks up to kid in disguise. And it's like, why are your knees buckled? Do you need to go to the loo? And they're like, Conan, you can't say that to a girl.
A thing a little kid could say, which is nice again. And she is totally, it's like, oh yeah, I do need to go to the loo actually. And your man's just like, I'll come with you for protection because there's a criminal about and that kind of thing. But it's like, okay, yeah, he's clearly disguising his height by bending the knees. And that's why he gave her that skirt in disguise, so he could probably disguise the fact that he was bending his knees constantly.
Yes, but while Heiji's making his move on Kid, we do get Conan explaining to Kogoro and Ran that, oh yeah, that's not her, that's Kid. And they're like, what?
That's absolutely Kid in disguise.
Yes, so they go in, they sleep it off, they don't confront him straight away. The great thing about this episode
They decide it's too late because all the buses aren't running because he was going to run it after 12 o'clock. Ronnie's heist. So they're like, let's just sleep in the museum.
Okay. So what he's actually done, he has not stolen the gem yet, the pearl yet. The pearl is still in the ice, and because they convince it to, oh, she sneezes, or he sneezes, which convinces them to turn the AC off so the ice will melt. And then he's just going.
And your man's just like, should we not keep the fucking ice up? Because it's like evidence of like the crime and stuff. Yeah, and the detective's like, no, it's fine, don't worry about it.
Yes, because that's the great thing about Komei is Komei's not bothering with the kid case. He's bothering with the stolen pearl case. And he's already figured out that this guy stole the pearl from the woman. And he knows that kid always returns the jewels, which aren't the one he's looking for, to the owner.
Like, kid technically isn't committing any crimes.
No, he's not.
What kid is doing is returning the jewel to its original owner. So it's like, no crime has been committed here. And I've caught a criminal who was trying to defraud someone. So
yeah, because they surround him and then he throws a smoke bomb and then he goes down a trapdoor and they're like, oh, the camera's like, oh yeah, I found that earlier. I didn't bother telling anybody.
It leads to outside the museum, but it's fine. He got away. He always returns it anyway.
Yes. And this
and
is
then
why...
your man's like, well, he'll return it to me then, obviously. And they're all like, hang on a second. And your man actually does some good detective work for once, unknowing. He's just like, you said you found this in a clam. And
in
it's
Japan.
Like, it's actually from... Yeah, but it's actually from coral in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And it's like, you couldn't notice... You said you noticed this kind of sheen on it, but it's actually like the flame coloring going through it that is the thing that is notable about that pearl. So you don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
You're under arrest. and then we see him giving it back and we learn why the grandfather had been given the pearl. And Kaito had found this out on a blog. So it seems like Kaito had gone in with all this information already. The grandfather had saved the life of this rich Caribbean businessman. And
so he gave him this ring that so he could propose to her grandfather's fiance, which was her grandmother, and he's just like, yeah, and this is the story, not the jewel I'm looking for, here you go. And I was just like, oh, this guy's all right. And he seemed like kind of a prick the entire time. I was like, oh, he's fine.
And we get the payoff of like, how did you not know that was not me? Because they pointed out that he was using the wrong way of referring to herself.
She was using the wrong self pronoun,
yes.
I think it was.
He was completely kind of at one point. Oh yeah, Heiji always turns into a crap detective whenever she's involved directly in the crime.
They were half saying it's like maybe he did notice. It's like I did notice the difference actually, and he's kind of like staring at her lips. She didn't have seaweed in her teeth.
Yes. That's what she was worried about in the previous episode. But it turns out this entire story is is entirely to get us to the point where we learn that Kobe is the brother of Scotch, the undercover agent in the Black Organization, who Zero blames the FBI agent for the death of. So that's the reason why.
So he was getting this file off of that precinct.
Yes,
but it's because... it's your brother's file, but the name was smudged, but it is to you. And is there any other? There's just a circle written on the back. But the circle, he reminded, is like, hey, brother, I met a friend in Tokyo. His name's Zero, and it's like that was a message that his brother would get, the number Zero.
Yeah, and it's his brother's phone with a bullet hole through it and the dried blood of his brother on it.
Pretty grim.
This had been sitting in a locker for a year of another dead policeman. And the other policeman they mentioned I can't remember the lady detective's name, because she's talking about how she was at school with police academy with all these.
She was at police academy with him, but she was like a year ahead of him. So
yeah, she was like in the different.
This guy's his senpai, but he was her. She calls him Chan, rather than senpai.
Yeah, and how they're like, don't you have good memories of police academy? And she's like, no, because of those guys goofing around all the time.
Awful for them.
Because those guys were goofing around all the time. Our class were the only ones who were properly punished.
Yeah, they really this year is fucking terrible. Next year, we're really going to clamp down on them and stop and let them dick about a bunch. So her year got fucked out of it because of her elders, who were just really wild childs.
And the other guy, I looked on the wiki, the other guy she mentions, also dead. That's the former. So one of them's like the former partner of her boyfriend, who they're now she's now partners with. And the other guy's also dead. So really, that's a cursed year.
I feel like it's like we are the cool detective cops and we're going to solve all the crimes, but they got in over their head and a bunch of them are getting fucking murdered for it.
Well, that one died in a car accident. I can't remember how the other one dies.
Was it an accident or is it going to be like...
Be something else later, yes. Mm. But I think it's maybe just like that. Maybe that explains Ray's mindset of like being maybe the last living member of that year. And why he's willing to do such risky things as Zero compared to everybody else. But yeah, it just now ties Kome into the overarching Black Organization plot.
Mm.
As everybody has to eventually be dragged into that. But it's nice, because then that can connect all those other Nagano cops to it as well.
Mm.
So if they need to... Because I think some of those, if I remember rightly, have got some sort of connection with... the cop who's a suspect for rum, and currently in the anime, the most suspect guy, given that he was referring to Ray as Bourbon. But yeah, that's where it got us to. And then next week in Japan, it's a remaster of an old episode, so who knows when we get some canon material again. But it was nice to drop in for two episodes, and then at least that gives me a half an hour to watch something else next week.
See you in a few months, Connor.
Bye.
Bye bye. I mean, I could catch up and watch all the older stuff that I have not watched yet.
Yeah.
Then we got Dragon Quest Episode 2, Dai and Princess Leona. So I like the fact that they get over their prickliness in this quite quickly between the pair of them. And basically, Princess Leona's come here to do a magic binding ceremony.
It's some magic kind of ceremony you need to do to go on to be a sage, because she's going to be a sage eventually.
It's the usual RPG thing. You gotta go around to the 8 dungeons to awaken the 8 like mana fountains or whatever to stave off the darkness.
If you want to be a sage, you got to do this magic ceremony to get it. I mean, like, they do mention about the kid, it's like, hey, so can you do magic? He's like, yeah, my grandpa showed me all the things, but I can't do magic. And he's like, wait, so you bound all the spells? So obviously he did all those ceremonies to do all the spells, but can't cast any of them.
And then it turns out that I was sus on the character design of the younger guy who was with them.
Valen.
But it turns out the old guy is also evil. And they've got a plan to have Princess Leona die here again, fighting monsters. So
if she gets killed by monsters here, we're not implicated, and I'm fucking next in line for the throne because I'm the advisor to her, and she has no heirs. So,
yeah.
And it's just like, that's a pretty good plan, guys. And half the guards he's brought with him are like the ones that are loyal to him. And we send the other guards with her to get killed by the scorpion we're going to release from one of those little pipes.
An evil scorpion. As opposed to all the good out monsters on this island. Yeah, so that happens. She gets poisoned. They got to get... an antidote won't do the job. It needs to be a squelch spell. So you've got to get back to Brass so he can do it. But Brass has been kidnapped by those seven guards and the head sage. And then they release a... what's it called?
Killer armor or a killing machine.
Killing machine, yes. And they're like, how can a killing machine be operational? The Dark Lord is dead. He operates if the Dark Lord's dead. Well, that's because I've adjusted it so this guy can be inside it and control it.
It's running off of his magic rather than the Dark Lord's magic, yeah.
Monsters, two arms. Get him.
So it beats up loads of the monsters, but yeah, Dai escapes with Princess Leona after he activates a spell of some kind.
I think it's like one of the higher level wind spells.
Yeah,
because it's like swoosh and kaswoosh or something.
Kawoosh is, yeah, that's what he uses later on. And a, is it a singe or something? I can't remember the names of all these
things.
Sizzle, yes. Yeah, so under stress, he can release the spells, it turns out.
Yeah, very Dragon Ball where he's shouting, there's light, there's rocks, you know, the jazz.
It's not Toriyama who did the comic, but it's very Toriyama-esque by virtue of being Dragon Quest associated. So, which I'm fine with.
Yeah.
And yeah, they defeat the bad guys. It attracts the attention of the people on the ship. They come to investigate. And they basically, they're like, well, Sage, I think you probably should be saying, you should probably admit to what you've been up to. There's no backing out of it now. And then we cut to another town and we see a ship leaving a town under attack of monsters. And this young man's asking, I assume his mentor, shouldn't we go back and fight the monsters? And he's like, no, we must look to the future. We must find, we've got to find a new hero.
There's loads of soldiers in that town. They'll be fine. We need to find the hero and like go get this problem at the source.
Because the Dark Lord's alive again.
What?
No. I liked some of the jokey bits in this, but I feel like some bits made me laugh that shouldn't. Like Dai constantly having to remind Brass that's like, hey, fucking cure the princess of poison. Like several times. Like, oh, right. Yeah, sorry.
I'm pretty sure everything which is funny is supposed to be funny. I do like the little gold blob. Is quite often the most interested character in a scene. He's the one who's paying attention the most to what people are saying. I enjoyed
pretty
this.
Good still. Yeah, it's fun between fighting an evil scorpion and then going up against that killing machine armor later on. It's still doing some good moves with the looks and the animation and so forth. It's still just like, again, it's really fun and very bright and bouncy and what to watch.
There were some good bits with the fighting the killing machine, but how did you feel about the CG when it was the CG Dai as well?
Oh, I was fine with that because I think it's on the better end.
Definitely.
I even don't mind. Hey, because we've seen that they can like do it another way when he's fucking gutting, and I mean fucking, he's eviscerating that scorpion. He's fucking slicing that thing open. It's a gout of green blood, but still, just say, well, we can do that. That's fine. We should try this other way. Let's let somebody else who's more skilled in this area have their go at doing a cool scene with that. And it looked great too, I think.
And if he's fighting a robot, it makes sense to fight that or to have that in CG. Yeah.
Yeah, but they show, yeah, we can also do it the other way around. We're kind of just doing this, I wouldn't say this because it's under some kind of time constraint. This could be like, you get like a different feel out of this. We could do different stuff if we go this direction. I think that's fine, yeah, keep it looking exciting. If it looks as good and creative and different as that, then keep doing what you're doing. Let's hope we can keep it up. You know, it's
sure, yeah.
It's been a real nice surprise to come into this. I mean, it's already just like a fun little yarn by itself. It doesn't need to be anything too complex. It's just having a lot of fun doing it. That's totally fine. It's doing that to execute that very well. But if they can just keep it in the looks department as well, looking as interesting as it does right now. Now, this would be just something that, that of course possibly exists to let people know more about these things that may escape their notice. I'm not sure a lot of us are coming into this season thinking, oh yeah, the Dragon Quest anime. I'm totally going to be watching that.
Yeah, I've got this deep and abiding feeling that by the time it's over, I will have purchased a Dragon Quest game to play.
Oh, no! That's how they get you.
I could feel it starting to work on me as I was like, okay, how do those spells work? And I was like, no, Brian, don't do it. That's how they get you.
I have been wanting to get Dragon Quest XI because that is, from what I hear from people who have enjoyed it, it's got enough quality of life adjustments to it from older games in the series that you actually can like play as just for maybe the half hour free you might get of a day after work or whatever and actually do something fun and worthwhile with it. It sounds great. That's kind of what you a nice compromise to have. I want to play like a long role-playing game but I haven't got like midterm break or anything like that like I used to when I was in school or college, but
yeah,
you'd be able to have a kind of compartmentalized a little bit of Dragon Quest, go around, fight some stuff. You're not necessarily like grinding or doing something like that. Actually, like making some genuine progress, even in a little side quest or towards some other goal.
Like, I don't know if it gets grindy later, but I was watching Shan play the Dragon Quest Builders 2, I think, which is like it's very Minecraft. But what I liked about it is build a house for this guy, and you need to have a forge in it because he's a smith. And I'm just like, oh, this is cool. And sometimes they give you plans to build something and you just lay out the blocks. It was very like chill like that. And then obviously go off into the wilderness and fight monsters. It had more direction than Minecraft tends to do. It's definitely like taking some cues from other things. And I mean, like it's still the same game, same monsters, same spells, if not done differently. So I'd be curious as to what they changed and stuff. I don't think I'm going to get one though, because I've tried playing one once and it was just like, this is too long. I cannot play this.
They can also be balls hard for how cartoony and welcoming they look.
Yeah, that is the thing. I haven't finished Inazuma 11 3 yet, and I've still got Yo-Kai Watch, whatever the latest, the last one on the 3DS is 3, I think, to play. So really, I should not be thinking about getting another game just because I'm enjoying the anime. But not without precedent. Normally it's the comic I end up getting, but who knows, it might be the video game. It may do its job. But I'm not going to start taking up gymnastics as much as I enjoyed Taisho Samurai Episode 1, Retiring Samurai.
That was a short season.
It was. We open with, his name's Joe, isn't it? That's what I'm taking.
Yeah. Joe Toro.
Oh, sorry. I was getting the wrong JoJo.
No, he's JoTaro. He's a JoJo, but he's not a JoTaro. He's
JoTaro. I don't know the gymnastics names. Parallel bars, is it? It's not parallel bars. It's the other bar.
No, because it's only the one bar.
Yes. It's the one which the game from Toby Takara, where you got to hit it right before, otherwise he falls on his face. As he falls on his face here. Anyway, he's doing that. I'm going to have to learn these things. And he falls on his face, and his coach is basically talking to him. And it's 2002, so this is a horrible realization that 2002 is now a historical setting for anime. The coach he's been convinced by his daughter to get David Beckham's haircut.
I was hoping in every back shot of the thing he'd have a different haircut in each, but no, he just used to have long hair.
Yes.
There's still other episodes. We never know.
That's true, yeah.
And he's basically saying, he's basically doing the typical anime manga thing of like, oh, I'm going to do all these things, I'm going to carry on. And he's like, no, you've got a really bad shoulder and you've got to retire. And he doesn't say,
bad shoulder and you got a bad rep. Like, he had this whole thing of like, ooh, he's Japan's samurai of the bars kind of thing. And then it was like, samurai should commit harakiri fucking is the new headline because he keeps fucking up. And it was just like, and your man has not taken it. It's like, I've been telling you fucking to retire.
Well,
what are you talking about?
This is out of the blue. And then we get this cutscene.
Maybe it's time to take off the uniform, JoTaro. You're right. It's getting all sweaty. Maybe you should stop being, a gymnast and take care of your daughter. You're right. I should.
You're right. I should go home for the day. I've been here all fucking day. He's just taking him wrong everywhere. And he's like, yeah, I should have followed up all those fucking times, but it's just really awkward,
get
dude.
Out you're the making gym it very right awkward. Fucking now. Yeah, so I get out of the gym and straight out to another gym because I should go for a run. You're right.
Yeah, it was this scene. I was like, oh, okay, right. This is the zombie. Land Saga writer.
Like, that was fine. I was just fine with it being like a normal thing. And then he gets home and there's a fucking Muppet at home. I don't mean the child. I mean the thing that's literally called Big Bird.
Big Bird, yes. Arigaki. Who could talk incredibly well for a bird.
Yeah. It can talk in contextual cues. Yes. And knows when it's being threatened.
It's not quite a cockatiel. It's not quite.
It's got a bit of shoebill. Yeah.
Shoebill, yeah. Mm. The bird from Castlegar. Yes. It's just some kind of terror bird. It walks and also hisses at you. Just goes, ah, there's someone in the house.
That's about bird, right? Yeah, that's a bit of goose there, I'd say.
Yeah, and we know that he's from South America, as we learn later on.
Because they keep threatening with sending him back to South America, which promptly shuts him up. He understands the threat. I'm being kicked out of the house.
He's voiced by Kafa Yamaguchi. And he's the first hint that this is as realistic as the conversation they had. And it was like a really... Having one character who's behaving very anime and the other character's like, no. It doesn't come out and say you're 29, but the character is 29. But yeah, it's clearly... You should not really be... It's a bit like... You should probably really seriously be thinking about retiring.
Yeah, I think gymnasts are generally considerably younger, right?
And so he's basically just he's agreeing with his coach, and he just keeps on. He's gonna got to tell my daughter. How am I going to tell my daughter?
We're going to go on a family trip. Well, I have a few days off.
His wife's dead. Apparently, an actress in.
I like the way it's kind of subtly put that she's in action movies and stuff, and that's why the daughter's into like ninjas. And the gymnast things as well.
So also how I can tell it's 2002 because here she's knee deep in Matrix references.
Yes.
Yeah, I did like that actually.
Which becomes like a little subtext, a little fun joke. But then becomes just
realistic,
just funny text in the next scene almost.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very curious. The dead wife does have a voice actress, so I don't know if we're going to get flashbacks or she's just going to start talking to him. Both things at this point seem a distinct possibility. As we get to we get to a park, which is a real park that you can go to in real life if it was
like the way they were talking. We wanted to go to this other place, but that was closed down. I was like, I can't believe that place shut down. I'm like, was that another place that was actually shut down?
Yeah, it's Edo Wonderland is where they've gone, where you can learn to become ninjas and whatever those policemen were called in that time period. Shinsengumi, that's it. And they're watching a ninja show, and he's like, oh, once the ninja show's over, then I'll tell her.
Because I got to tell her soon where the park's closing. And it's like, she's having such a good time. I don't want to interrupt this fun ninja show she's watching. I'll tell her after the ninja show. It's not like anything would happen to make it go on a bit longer and distract us from that.
Except, of course, mysterious agents show up looking for one of the ninjas.
I like the fact the main ninja guy who'd beat off all the evil ninjas was kind of like, what? Am I under arrest? And it's like, it's one of the random baddie ninjas that was like, oh, fuck, agents are here. Better ninja my way
out of there.
Yeah.
Didn't have to jump through the palanquin carrying the noble lady, but
he did because it was cool.
Dive straight through it.
A bit of a rooftop chase. The daughter's chasing after this ninja because this is a really cool ninja show. And your man's like chasing after the daughter, and the ninja leaping off a roof like bumps into him and kind of like looks at him with starry eyes, and it's like, wait, what's that about? Smoke bomb gets away from the secret agents. It was
the kids.
It was the Chekhov's fucking kids being trained to be policemen. We were going like, you're suspicious.
Make him away, toys.
And everyone's like, ha ha ha, what a good ninja show. And your man's just like, this park's gotten really fucking weird.
And then the ninja follows them home.
Ninja on the train was a good bit. I did like your man going like, when he just sees a ninja trying to go to the bathroom.
Well, he was doing to say, he's like, I'm gonna like, no, be just gonna kind of be hiding. I'm gonna kind of up in the corner, but he can't see me. But it's a little obvious when I'm
The only ninja in the train.
Hiding in the field of bats, blow, breathing through the bamboo reed. They might notice that when they go for a dump or whatever.
The dad does have a point later when it's like, the ninja keeps fucking interrupting me. But it's like, you had all that time on the train, dude. That was an excellent fucking time to bring it up.
Yeah, so we get the line, Dad, there's a ninja in the bath. Then the mother-in-law shows up and agrees that the ninja...
She's cool as fuck,
the ninja can stay here because it's her house. She built it, so... She gets to choose a illegal immigrant or not an illegal immigrant, because we have learned this, that he is an illegal immigrant. Well, that's the impression. That's what they've learned, whether that's the truth.
He's like, please don't let those agents deport me.
Yes.
And I was like, what, to like Siberian prison or something? I'm not exactly sure of the context here. But yeah.
And so they're going to let him stay, but he's got to stay at home when they go to the gym, but he follows them to the gym, because... Which actually saves him.
She takes him to the gym because I'm not leaving you home with the ninja.
Yes.
I don't trust this ninja.
Who's just like one spidered up this pounster in the back upper corner of the sitting room.
Says, yeah, just
why are you doing that? Dada's hanging out, you know.
Yeah, and the kids in there coaching, and that we learn there's another guy out of this gym who raps all the time.
He raps all the time and he's constantly looking for things that are from a place because they rhyme with the name of the place. That'd be totally logical. He's really confounded as to why there'd be ninjas in a place where there's no ninja in that word.
He believes in nominative determinism.
Yeah, pretty much. And your man's given the perfect opportunity with the kids because he's shown them how to do like a handstand kind of thing. And they're just like, oh, how come he can't show us more? And he's like, my daughter's here. Everyone's here. It's a good time for me to say, yeah, actually, guys, I got to bring this up with you now. Fucking ninja. Fucking
hey,
ninja
comes
in.
Me, I can do this. Woo. I'm a ninja.
Ninja comes in and starts doing a floor show.
Yeah. There's a sequence.
He's good. He's good, but
there's a sequence where it looks like they've attached a GoPro to an actual gymnast in terms of the camera, because it's against real backgrounds. The way the camera's moving.
They go to a real theme park. Presumably this is a real gymnasium. Yeah,
and he does his finish and his ninja costume explodes off his body
because he's so muscular.
He's going to do a press conference to explain his decision, and then he's about to say, I'm going to retire. Not. And I like the way everyone just
not
goes, what? What a weird way of phrasing it.
That's very 90s, but all right.
The reason is because he's looking back at his life with his daughter and how much he enjoys his gymnastics. And
even in his speech, he's saying, like, gymnastics has always been a part of my life, but I got lucky to be married by a woman who I did not deserve and had a beautiful daughter, and they considerably supported me in gymnastics. So even in my private life, gymnastics was part of it. And it's like, no, I'm not going to retire, actually.
Yeah,
well, I was really sweet about that little memory was, I can remember it all when the little girl, Ray, was only a tot. And, I'm going to let her wear the medal. And it's a bronze medal. And it's not ever been about, like, oh, I got to be the best of the best. It's just like, no, I just love doing this. If I can get some results out of it, great. But I miss me happy and my family are happy to see me do it as well. Mm. It doesn't need to be, like, world number one. Just need to be loving what you're doing.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, no, the... Olympic Committee demand more of me than that, so that's why I'm getting kicked in the curb here. But if there's a way I can hang on this for a little while longer, I'll try it. Maybe this ninja guy is putting a fire underneath me.
I wonder, because the coach did make a point that he's not cut out for coaching, but I wonder if that's going to be the direction with him coaching Leonardo.
Like, will he be able to coach this crazy fucking foreign ninja? Because that was it was a nice scene established with the kids in the gymnasium. It's like, oh, how do you do a handstand like that? Well, you just get your motion, you go like, whoop, and then you compress it and you go, wah, you know, and they're just like, we don't have a fucking clue what you mean. That's terrible coaching. So,
and then we get the OP.
And it's a cover of name of the song?
Shanghai Honey.
Yeah, Orange Range. I was just like, this sounds a little different. And then I looked it up and I was like, oh, it's him fucking singing it.
Three main actors singing it. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
And all the cast dancing to it.
It's big and fun.
It is. I wasn't sure going from the trailer, because the trailer did not really give you much of an idea of what sort of show it was going to be.
You might be a little hesitant as well, because it's about gymnastics, and what they're showing you is a lot of more so the opening scenes where he's on the bars, but it's fine, but it's not the most exciting CG character doing the routines. We see later on when Leo busts in and he's doing his shit, that it's gonna try a couple of different like techniques to try and convey this, so it won't just be that, it looks like. And you got the director, Shuichi Mizu, and you got the writer Shigeru Murakoshi, and you got the character designer Kazufumi Fukugawa of Zombieland Saga, which we again surprised us by how much we enjoyed it, considering its premise.
Yeah.
I will say I watched it a second time, and it definitely does an illusion on you in making you think it looks better than it does. The first time I was like, "Well, this looked great," and then the second time I watched it, I was like, it's fine.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's not spectacular. It does look great. I mean, it does look good, though.
The character designs really help. And
that
goddamn bird really helps as well.
Yeah. First of all, honestly, I think as far as setting out stall for the characters here and the premise of it, and this, having enough weird swerves in there to make it stand out a bit more from the standard redemption story, sports story, sports arc, then let's have a look at this. And I'm gonna trust these dudes. We've enjoyed what they've done before. We'll see what we're going to take. Yeah. They've surprised us, even within that, after the fact.
And I suspect once you stick that opening at the front of each episode, it will get you hyped up.
Single time. It is the right energy.
Then we've got Healing Good, Pretty Cure, episode 28. I did write down the name of the description, but it's only in the YouTube description. Not on what I've got here.
Something to the effect of suffering again, Darizen, you are.
Now, I saw a lot of comments about people not questioning the way this series is going based on this episode.
Oh.
It's a very special episode of Healing Good Pretty Cure. So we have Nodoka. She's had a mega part shoved into her by Darizen. So it's fun. Poison her. It's deadly. We got to get her to the hospital. And my parents are in bits. It's like, oh man, she's having a relapse again. It's just like all the time ago when she was sick again. It's like, what's happened? They're distraught. Rabirin accompanies the Sphinx along with them, and the rest of the gang can just only watch and hope and wonder, is she going to be all right? Like, Rabirin is just like, I failed you. I'm meant to be a healing animal doctor, but you're lying here in bed. You're sick. You're almost dying. The doctors can't figure out what's wrong, because as far as you can tell, all their standard medical tests, nothing is wrong with her, but she's got a very low pulse, she's very weak, she can't get out of bed, she's in some great pain. And I'm kind of wondering again, because from stories of what Nodoka has told him last time she was sick, it was something similar to this, where she was obviously ill, but the medical tests, the ones that they use in the hospital anyway, they couldn't find anything abnormally wrong with her. Then suddenly, just like for whatever reason, she just got better again. So, is it possible that they might have had mega biogens or the dark parts floating around before? It's like, yeah, because even when this whole healing garden is open and running, things still got through the net. That's why we have King Biogen, and why we have the rest of them, who we call their Terra biogens. I guess they go up in size like a file, like a gigabyte and a terabyte, I suppose, something like that. But once they evolve, once they the infection is supposed to progress to a certain stage, they go from a mega one, which is just big stompy ROM mindless monster, to the sentient ones, who we see are the agents of the king. And we've seen them as well, but Patati Muda and the bird who are animals who got mutated by it. But think, well, we should go visit her in hospital. We got to stand by her mate. We got to see what's going on with her. Just in time for when she's taking a really bad turn, because Rabirin is holding her hand, saying, "I promise I won't let go of you again. I'm going to stand by you. Oh my God, you're dying." It's like, oh, she's convulsing in pain. What's going on? It says, oh, it's her healing, her pretty cure immune system is fighting off the infection. So the only thing to do was just kind of by her own willpower fight it off, And it becomes turns into like from a medical drama to like some kind of fate healing thing. It's like, evil mega parts, I cast thee out. I say out, evil shadow. And it's this, a shadow just kind of comes out of her body, just kind of skitters away out the window. And I follow it then and track it down. And Diary is in there. It's like, oh, so it's the thing is, has emerged already. What's going to look like? Because his whole thing was, I'm going to put the mega part into it. And while it does, it kind of gestates inside the host. And then later on, it emerges. And it's a beautiful butterfly or a terrible yogin like myself. But it's only half done. So as this apparates and manifests, then we see it's like, oh, it's like Darius and his little kid brother. That's strange. It looks so alike. And it's what was born out of the host, Nodica. And we're going to go fight him and go kick his ass. But over the course of the fight, it becomes clear to Darius and anyway, that, oh, now I remember. I remember when I was just a wee little germ and I infected somebody a long time ago and I was like, it was raising hell on their body. Then I heard the call from King Bio again from the darkness already. He was, you know, he was the light to me anyway, saying, all germs, come forth to me. We're going to take over the world and destroy it. And that's when I emerged from her body. And my host, it was you, Nodica. You were the host I infected when you were a little girl all those years ago. And I only went away and you got better after I was summoned forth. It's clear to me now. And the evidence is right there because this smaller version of myself that's been born forth from you, it looks just like me. That's it. So now we have this kind of connection going on. Like Nodica, she wants to get better, wants to get stronger. Not to worry her parents, you know, she wants to, doesn't want to interfere. She's going to be getting relapsed and then die in them or get sick in them again. Also because I can't die until like take care of Darius and he's my responsibility. He was born from me, but I'll kill him with my own hands. But in a nicer way than that. But it's definitely, yeah, it's a thrown I'm kind of wondering, yeah, what kind of way it can kind of go, because it seems like it's going to like escalate more. We're going to have, rather than it infecting, let's say, an inanimate object and make it a big monster, but now it's going to go around infecting people, and like we're going to get like bigger, stronger foes out of that. In the usual kind of particular way, it's something born maybe of your darkest fears or impulses, but in a virus form or whatever like that. But it is maybe straying away from the point of like, oh, it's important to kind of take care of yourself and to eat right and exercise and go to the doctor regularly and manage your condition. But what if that condition is just like magical germ? doesn't really like have the same impact then when it's just like, well, you could eat right, exercise, and get checked up and don't smoke or do drugs, but that won't matter if you can just. We have a magic wand, and they're going to just like magic your condition, your illness away from you.
I mean, like, that's not like against a one for one for reality. Like, you know, you can exercise and eat right and shit, but there might be a global pandemic, and you just might need to fucking not interact with humans.
Yeah, I think people were hoping that the original illness was a real illness, and now it's been waved away by saying it's a magic wand.
It is. It takes away like a little bit of her story herself, or like that informed who she was, and she thinks in her mind she got better because there were so many people who minded after her and watched off her, and it was a slow process, it was a painful process, like physically and emotionally, but she got through with the help of her parents, the help of the doctors and nurses and other staff and all of her friends who helped her get about it. But it just kind of went away one day, and now you've got to kick that germ's ass forever.
And the other thing which people had issue with was like the idea of the story having this girl give birth to monsters repeatedly within an episode, like giving birth to this monster. Turns out you also gave birth to that monster.
Yeah, because it's going to happen now as well. That's no, oh, it's going to happen to each of the pretty cure gang now, and it's going to be something that's like a perfection of themselves. They got to fight now as well. It's it probably was a better way to escalate the threat. If you wanted to have some way to make the, you know, move on from the large like giant monster enemies to the more like the sentient like human sized ones, so we could have more interesting fights. And it was like, some pretty cool fight going on there. The little version of Darby's, and he's like really supple and bendy because he's got like, his young body, his bones haven't joined together yet, so he's like kind of like he's got like really like rubbery, noodly limbs. He's actually just kind of throwing big slaps instead of punches. He's kind of like his arms like whips instead. That was pretty cool. But again, maybe the mechanism that could have arrived to, you know, add to justify that kind of action, that change in it as well, could have been a little bit better, because it's taken away like some of the, it's undermining the theme, the kind of the message of the entire series a little bit by doing it that way around. Plus, from the looks of things, you know, at least like Nordicus is going to be going out and just kind of jogging around anyway and exercising. It's a brush with death, is can do that to you want to take care of yourself. But again, what's the point if all you got to do is just turn into a pretty cool and die quick your illness away? Like, it's meant to be like, you metaphorically do that. You don't literally do that.
Yeah, it's the, I hadn't, until I saw people discussing this, because I think people were assuming it's a man putting his fetishes in it, but no, it, the head writer's, can't remember her name now. But she's the same head writer who was on the two Sentai shows I really did not get along with of recent years. The one with the animal men and the one with the thief rangers versus the police rangers. Don't think either of them really the script's faults though in either time. It was both of them felt like shows where not much money had been spent on them. But yeah, she's mainly out of live action stuff, is where she's from. She also did a bunch of episodes on Akiba Ranger.
Yeah, Junko Komura, what else has he done? Anything? Did the Hokuto Precure movie and did a little bit of Kira Kira Precure. But yeah, mostly Sentai stuff. It's nice to have, you know, some more dynamic action sequences, but I'm not sure that if there's a trade-off in the actual emotion and sentiment of the thing, it was worth it. But they might be able to correct it. Well, keep an eye and see if it does. Big development, certainly. Big week for all pretty cure here.
Interestingly enough, they went in the opposite direction. But I guess Kira Major this week, they brought back two characters from Geki Ranger. The two of the supporting cast. So Geki Ranger had, like, in the background this sports company, and they revealed that, well, it had been put in the earlier episodes in her sports equipment. But the Green Ranger, who's the athlete, she gets all her equipment from the same company, from Geki Ranger, and they brought the two characters back from it. But they also had Michiko Yokote, the head writer of Geki Ranger, brought in to write the episode as well. So it was like, because sometimes all these things take place in the same universe, sometimes they don't. But in this case, I guess they all took place in the same universe. But yes, talking of shows where people are accused of putting their fetishes in, the new character in Kira Major definitely feels a bit like that. But the evil villainess character who's constantly licking her lips and whipping monsters. Yes. But her transformation device looks a lot like a toy, so I assume she's going to become a good guy at some point down the line. It's like, none of the other monsters have devices which look like toys.
What kind of toy?
A normal transformation toy. A normal transformation toy. So I assume she'll be like the purple ranger at some point. Because she's learning human feelings, you see. So I guess that will be how eventually she turns. So as a brief Kira Major update, I am still checking in because it is quite well made. Next up, though, more Toei stuff. And we're talking One Piece, episode 945, A Grudge Over Red Bean Soup. Luffy gets into a desperate situation. Which I believe we spend the entire episode in one location. With one fight.
In the prison, obviously.
Yes. It'd be weird if that was the title and we never went to Udon. As basically, Lin Lin, she wants that soup. And she's not going to let her dinosaur get in the way. And in the process of trying to get this soup, rescues Kid and Killer. But also almost kills Luffy and Hyogoro. as they get flung from the arena, this is enough to make Luffy learn how to use Ryo, because apparently he only learns in high-pressure situations. And so by the end of the episode, in order to make him fully learn how to use it, as they're running away from Big Mom, Hyogoro just stops stock still. It's basically like, well, this is the only way you're going to learn. Either she kills me or you rescue me using that new power.
Bit bold, but let's see if it pays off for the old man.
There's some other stuff with Raichu and Caribou. They're going to take out communications. I think that's it, though. I think it's pretty much it. On the sidelines, Okiku and Chopper are just staring at the carnage which is happening, because it's mainly Big Mom beating up Queen. Which was not as exciting as I'd been led to believe, but Ryo transformation is pretty good, though.
I think folks are just who maybe hadn't been following the comic, just been following maybe the just watching the TV show, were just didn't expect the dinosaur or that kind of
maybe,
dinosaur.
Yes.
Like, wow, cool!
The most fun bit of the fight is her swinging him round the arena. I really like the visual effects for the Ryo of like the it's almost like cherry blossom flowing through his body.
I mean, you see it in the opening.
Yeah, and forming this sort of pink aura around his fists. And we get two different ways to show it. The second way is fantastic, because it's just drawn to look great. It barely looks like Luffy, but it looks fucking amazing. Of like the black and white drawing of Luffy and the arm covered in the petals. Yeah, that was good stuff. Probably won't watch it next week, because I think I've probably got enough stuff to watch outside of One Piece. Though maybe I will, because we're getting to one of my favourite scenes in the arc. But I suspect that might be two episodes time.
You see the gif of it before, are you?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they've got.
You see the highlight, yeah.
They've got to get your fella out of the jail cell as well. Karamatsu, is that his name?
Jesus, Karamatsu. Yeah, you haven't gotten him out yet.
Yeah, still sitting there watching the whole thing.
Oh, much like we are. Yeah.
And then finally, Moriarty the Patriot, Episode 1, The Earl's Crime. So, we open with a kid being chastised for reading detective novels. And then we go and flash back to the real Moriarty.
Where it's like, oh, see this like engraving you got in your copy of the book? See this old bastard right here, this old fucking haggard-looking motherfucker? That's not Moriarty I know. The Moriarty I know is this hot, sexy blonde dude and his two equally hot brothers who solve mysteries, but with a twist.
With a twist.
Of mysteries for evil, but kind of for good.
Yes, it's like, well, I could use my great detective brain for solving crimes, or I could use it for committing crimes, and then I could use those crimes for class war.
I mean, like, it comes out good in the end, I guess.
I suspect once they introduce Sherlock and Watson and some of the other characters, then we'll get, like, a little bit more of the... I think it's, like, the seductive nature of his... the reasons the brothers are doing these things.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it doesn't shy away from the brutalness. And of course, they never do the things, I assume.
Make other motherfuckers do it, seemingly. And I'm wondering, is it like, are they like, oh, we're helping this dude out? And it's like, okay, now you have that dude in your pocket.
Yes.
Shit later. He's got connections.
And also,
we've high class
murdered a member of the nobility, which is also, I believe, the thing.
That's ideal.
Well, you can see how they would justify it in their own minds. Like, here was someone, someone they loved, their child was a victim of this brutal crime. Like, the authorities they're never going to bring this man of justice, because we know it's somebody who's probably going to be, like, it's going to skip the long arm of the law because based on where they are in society. So, they might never see justice. They might never have that closure that they seek to desperately. So really, who wouldn't want something like this? And, who are we to not, who we with the means to do so, not to grant it to this poor individual?
And let what was it? Something like Caroline was like by the twisted laws of this society, this guy's allowed to exist, and it's just like, that's not right. I'm gonna fucking do something about that.
Yeah, so we should say the opening is a child being murdered, and it turns out this is one of many children who've been murdered, and so Moriarty like connects all the dots between the children and figures out
he kind of goes to the brother. It's like, hey, check out all the victims, check out their father's occupations. It's like, what's the common thread? Rich motherfuckers, obviously.
Yes,
and all also my businesses for us, like, it's usually a trade, so it could be having like an older son or child could be an apprentice in the shop.
But it's never any trade. Like he points out, like a rich man wouldn't buy his own beef in the butcher.
He would go to the tailors.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you go to the stables, you get the stable boys there. Even if you go to the gentleman's club, you're going to probably have a messenger boy to bring you messages, you know, from somebody trying to like send letters to you. So there's another out.
The guy who's like his butler is like, but brother, what about this guy? This guy was a street urchin. And he's like, yes, that's the one clue that'll solve the crime. So he has to hunt down where the street urchin used to ply his trade, I guess.
Well, the butler is also his brother. He's both the youngest brother, so he's got to do all the odd jobs.
But I mean, like, he's serving crepes and stuff. Actually, is it just omelettes, I think?
I did look a bit into this. I'm really looking forward to the origin story. I don't really know what it is, but it just sounds so crazy and also so like a riff on JoJo's Bizarre Adventures opening story arc is like,
okay.
it's yeah, we'll get to it. But yeah, that's another thing. I mean, I really like this episode. It was a lot better than I was expecting. And then when I read it around, like, well, what's the story about? I was like, oh, I really want to see this origin story of the three brothers, because that sounds fantastically bleak and dark. And
this show is super dark. Like, it didn't open with a bunch of childs murdered. If you're not up for that, like, do not watch this fucking show. This is a very bleak view on humanity.
But it feels so much better than the way Akudama Drive handles that.
I enjoyed Akudama Drive, but I get where your problem is. Like, it's very fucking surface level cool.
Yes. Yeah.
Whereas this is like, you can see it's like, they're doing evil, but to the right fucking people. So you're kind of like, that's fucking tempting. And that's well done. And it's framed as such as our heroes are monsters. They're never not framed with their horrific fucking murder red eyes. Just like, oh God, these people are up for bad shit.
Yeah, it is tempting as well, seeing as we exist very blatantly. Well, we always have, but it seems to be more fucking blatant and in your face now that we never see the wicked get held to account for what they do, and they never face any consequences for their actions, and things only just get worse and worse and worse, and nothing can be done about it. They will be fined, but things still, they have infinite money, so a fine, you will do nothing to them, which is, it should be like fucking mandatory sentencing for a lot of what they get up to, but they can pay their way out of it. So what's to be done? Well, you can't pay away out of a fucking grieving father skinning you alive.
They follow up the leads. He finds a kid who's bad at playing an accordion. It's like, okay, hey kid, where'd you get that accordion? I got it off my friend who died, so I inherited his business. I'm still learning. I was like, oh, where used to he buy his trade? And he kind of goes to the place. It's like, where would the rich people be? And it's like, rich building. Aha! Perfect view from that window. Got to join that club. Hey brother, do you know anything about this club? Oh yeah, I got a few mates in that club. Cool. Get me an introduction.
Yes,
I need to stake out the place.
Has that guy had that seat since the club was founded? No, but he tries to sit in there as often as possible. That's our suspect. Also, like, one of the fathers had said something about if he could get his hands on the guy who killed his son.
Like, he's looking at his fucking his tailor's things of scissors and stuff. If I could just get my hands on him, and his eyes like nearly glassing over.
Yeah.
Fucking terrifying shit.
So that's, of course, we'll have to be calling the William James Moriarty, Albert James Moriarty, and Louis James Moriarty, because they're all called Moriarty.
Okay, so William's the main blonde guy.
Yes. William's the one from the books.
Yeah.
I think Albert is the older one.
the guy with the, I think he's green eyes, brown hair. So yeah, he's a little different.
And I don't know if he's going to be Louis or Louis is the...
probably Louis, because they seem to be leaning French with the names.
Is the one who's acting as William's butler.
Who looks very similar, and that's going to be confusing.
Yeah, and so and then they capture it. They get him and his, because his coachman's working with the Earl in the murders.
Yeah, he's scooping up the kids, basically.
And yeah, it's leave him to the tailor, and then we'll clean up afterwards. And if
two things I really liked is him like going like, "Hey, I noticed that suit is from Thing, and I noticed that your little your ring is from this particular jeweler." And he's like, "Whoa, you're very perceptive. What are you, a detective?" And it's like, no. Also, I can, but your wristwatch is from Thing, and your thing is from Thing, and you like the blood of young hairs. And it's just like, Jesus Christ, I gotta go. Just absolutely fucking nails him to the wall. And then the callousness later when he's kind of demanding, he's like, "There you go. There he is. Don't take too long. I've only got the one cigarette." So he's just standing outside going like, "Doo, doo, 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 doo," as the murder's fucking going.
That screams
behind
him.
Yeah.
And then we see him making the deal in between this time as well. And then the next day they're checking the papers and they're like, "Well, there's no report of anything which would send the town of London into uproar."
What, nothing about a lord and his coachman getting killed? Great. Almost like it was the perfect crime. Yes. A crime that is not where no one finds out anything about it. That's the best kind of crime. Mm-hmm.
It's also kind of as well that these upper crust folks, they think they're all that. But there is also a lot of them, and they're all fucking jostling for position, for supremacy. But if you're not like top of the top and you fucking get disappeared one day, nobody might bat an eyelid about that either.
Because they're just happy to step into that fucking ownership of stuff.
So you're not special or advanced or superior as you believe yourself to be. It's all just money. It's all just illusions.
Hmm.
And the newspaper has English, but it's almost, I don't know whether they've just transcribed it badly or they've OCR'd it poorly.
They've done a good job to the point where it's zoomed really far in on the paper so you can't make out like a real fucking long sentence. But
some characters are wrong and there's a year wrong, and which makes me think it might be an OCRing issue. Or they've copied, what they could have done, they could have copied it out of PDF. He says, speaking of knowledge from work, where you pick up characters which you can't see when you copy them out of a PDF.
Yeah, you do have to check over for that, for sure, yeah.
Oh, but I mean, if you just have to export, and like, I think at work of things that happen like during the night, kind of a daily night or a report, and when you gotta convert that to like a different file to email it, it just was some kind of forbidden arcane text, and you exported it when you copy it out there. It was like, where did this all come from? I shouldn't send this. I think I'm cursed now for even reading it.
But whatever the article was, it was specific to the time period. It wasn't like lorem ipsum or some random thing they've grabbed.
I imagine they grabbed it from, like you say, a contemporary article to make it look authentic to the setting. Yeah,
hopped onto archive.org and grabbed something.
And just copied it from that PDF. Yeah, yeah. It's
cross-continental road domain. Race begins in the United States. first woman racer.
This was a massively pleasant surprise. I mean, I watched it because I knew people were hyped for it, I think based on the comic. But actually, in terms of the production and the animation and the direction,
it's the direction that brings it up, really. Mm. It's pretty good.
Nothing spectacularly animated, just really nice framings and everything, yeah.
Yeah, I would always be hesitant a bit about going into Sherlock Holmes things, because sure. I still feel like it's been a little bit from the well that was poisoned a little bit for me with the BBC Sherlock and what's been out of that. But maybe it's just been long enough that someone else can have another go at this and do something.
Also, this is a very different direction or angle that we can take it from.
Well, I did see someone comment that it seems to be taking parts from both. It is influenced to a degree by the BBC one. In of this Moriarty being a crime consult, a consulting criminal, as opposed to a consulting detective.
I get that.
Because that's not in the novels.
No. I mean, like, also, Moriarty never appeared in the novels.
I don't think there were three of them either.
There wasn't three
of them. We don't know.
But we will get other characters. We'll get other supporting characters from the two Moriarty stories. We'll be showing up.
Okay.
Fred Porlock and Sebastian Moran.
He's a henchman.
Yes. Yes, various associates and henchmen and informers. And yeah, say Holmes and Watson is turning up, and I assume other characters will be throughout. And I'm sure they'll all be incredibly attractive.
It'll be kind of fun to, because Holmes isn't going to catch the Moriartys like any time, like early on anyway. So it'd be kind of fun to see the other side of that, where it's like, they're kind of relishing in their victory over Holmes. They're like just like kicking back with the cigars and brandy. It's like, we fucked that guy over. We think he's hot shit. He's just like all the rest. We want to do him over as well.
Hmm.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they portray Holmes and Watson. I'm assuming it'll be similarly sympathetic to the Moriartys, just to get the friction against them. But we'll wait and see. There's 13 volumes of the comics. I assume we're probably only getting the first six or so.
Mm.
One would guess, if that. Yeah, looking forward to watching more of this. This is definitely on my list of things to watch. So I think I'm going to go with Kamui, Jujutsu Kaisen, Dragon Quest, Gymnastic Samurai, Moriarty the Patriot, and I'll say maybe, Mr. Osomatsu next week, because I've already watched most of that.
Oh, yes, that's right. That's out now as well.
One thing that was catching me about the Taiso Samurai, is it with a Z or an S? Because I've seen conflicting things like...
I was going to call it Gymnastic Samurai, because that's what they're calling it on Funimation from now.
Yeah. It's easier.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen it with the S and the Z, yes. Yeah, Mr. Osomatsu is out, and we'll talk about that next week, but I was pleasantly surprised how much I've enjoyed the first episode, because I was like, is it going to work for me? And it kind of addresses that question. I think they went into making the first episode of the new series by assuming that everyone was everyone was thinking similarly, is it still going to work?
Yeah. Okay.
But we got that to look forward to. I think that's the last thing new, at least on my radar, for next week. Yeah.
There's other things I might just look at that came out since I didn't have time for, see if there are any great shakes.
Yeah, there's a couple of things which I was tempted to look at, but yeah, it's finding the time, and this week I'm not sure I have the time.
Sure.
Yeah. I'd be remiss before we close out not to mention that we kind of went past it quite quick there, but the ending sequence to Jujutsu Kaisen is some fresh shit.
Oh, yes,
it is.
Good point.
It is, yes. We should, yeah. The other, again, it's making my point about Hypnosis Mike for me.
Exactly.
It sounds fucking great. Yeah, exactly.
But, even Gymnastic Samurai with the rapping actors in that is still better than Hypnosis Mike was. But yeah, this has got a real rapper on it, and it's the guys who did one of the Beastars songs.
The opening to Beastars, isn't there?
I don't know Beastars. I just know when I looked up the song, everyone was talking about Beastars.
Must be, because that's the only thing that has got raps in it that I can remember, at least.
Yeah, I'm not sure the rapper's on that, but because the rapper's not part of the band, he's with the band featuring the guy doing the rapping on that song.
Okay.
It just looks really fucking glass as well. It's like this
rough marker coloring in,
colored in with markers. Mm. Yeah. And as well as some of the fashions there, it feels very those turn of the 90s or early 90s there. And it's a swagger as well. Like, Yuji's coming out the door, he's got his foot in the moves on, his front shimmy in the shoulders. Even when the Kugisai comes out, which is just like Aaron's got shopping bags, he's still like doing a little bit of moves with that. So it's only really Fushiguro is just trying to, I'm too cool for this. I'm not going to dance.
Yeah.
Mm.
ALI is the band. Alien Liberty, oh, okay. Alien Liberty International.
Oh, I love when they do that. I'm used to learning about an old fucking dub act called UFO, United Future Organization.
Yeah. Okay.
That's kind of become one of my favorite naming conventions now. It's like, yeah, there's something that sounds, the acronym you want, or changing an acronym to something to make it mean something else.
Hmm.
Apparently they were formed on the day of... Let's have a look at this thing on the J-Pop Wiki. Trivia. They were formed on the day of Muhammad Ali's death, hence the name.
Okay.
Funk, well, soul, champs. Jazz, Latin, they describe themselves as.
Hmm.
Well, they're a stiff contender for ending songs to Olympia Kai Class anyway.
Yeah, I think it would be work really well when it's a sudden moment of light against whatever terrible thing an episode's going to end on.
Yeah.
It'd be really inappropriate when it busts into that.
It'll just make it hit all the harder. It's like, happy dancing time. It's like, all these people are dead.
Aklo is the rapper, though.
Hmm.
Lost in Paradise by... ALI featuring Aklo.
It's in my head again. It will be yours too, dear listener, when you eventually get around to watching it, based on our recommendation, of course.
Righty ho. When shall we three meet again? Is it Wednesday?
Wednesday. It could be Tuesday, because I am off of work. We could even start earlier. We could even go on Monday if you wanted to. I'll talk with you a bit more about that off mic, of course.
Okie dokie. So
pencil in for Tuesday then.
Tuesday. Okay. Anything coming up on Secret of the Sailor Madness that the viewers and listeners need to know about?
Well, they should have a listen right now. We've got Mutual Pal, the inevitable of Ace Comicals, over to help us talk about the closing chapter of Samurai Jack, Samurai Jack the Final, which was we've had a deal on for nigh on 5 years ago to talk about this original character, in which we concluded that it didn't need an ending. But here we are in the year of all our 2020 talking about it again. And plans are afoot to other Mutual Pal and co-host and so forth, another that Anthony Askew will be hopefully on hand to talk with us about Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island, which is kind of the revival of the franchise back in 1998. Seasonally appropriate. And if we've got time, maybe one other thing, but we'll see how we go. But that's the plans as they are right now.
Rightio, coming up this weekend, we've got an episode of The Anime They Didn't Make Us with me and Gary Hedges, where we'll be talking about Mechadoc. That's my pick.
Oh, cool.
And Armored Police Metal Jack. That's Gary's pick.
That also sounds cool. I know that Mechadoc is cool, but that also sounds tantalizing.
Yes, so you can find out just how cool they are on Sunday, when I put that episode out. Otherwise, we'll be back here next week with more. Let's go. Goodbye.
Bye.
He hurries around trying to find the window, which has got YouTube in, so he can end the podcast.
You just plug the computer out. It's like, boom.
There we go.
Runs a magnet.
There's the end stream button. Goodbye.